Well, thank you all first for having me. I appreciate it so much. Rotary provides such a value in all communities, and I was pleasantly surprised to be invited today, so thank you. First, let me say my name is Ashley Tyler. I was Ashley Stewart. I'm originally from Caldwell County. The last 15 years, I've lived in Troy County, so don't hold that against me. Lived there with my husband and my two almost grown kids. Financially, they're not grown, but they think they're grown. As Laura said, I originally was a registered nurse, or I still am a registered nurse by trade. I started in public health in 2004 at Pinerol District Health Department. And at that time, I started in the HANDS program, worked through the HANDS program for about 7 years, and then went into school health, worked in school health, at the time kind of transitioned to Graves County Health Department and then Todd County. And then in 2021, I got the opportunity to come back here to Pinerol District. And somebody asked me what made me applying for the director or coming back to Pinerol District so important to me. And I said, because this is my home. This is my community. You know, Pinerol is comprised of five counties. So we have Caldwell County, Crittenden County, Trigg County, Livingston County, and Lyon County. And I have either lived in those counties or have family in those counties. And so it's home to me. And looking out with you all, this is home. You know, all the familiar faces of previous school teachers and government people and friends, it's home. And so that was why it was so important to me to come back and add value to our public health system here in Pinerol. With that being said, when Laura asked me to speak, I think originally she asked me to speak for about 15 minutes, and then the text yesterday said 30, and I'm like, I was thinking, well, our preacher don't even preach 30 minutes on Sunday. Anyway, so I do, if you all have questions as I go through some of the services that we offer, please ask and make this a conversation base, because I think that's what's so important. Also, I always tell people public health is we're kind of the invisible heroes. You don't know we're there. We're always in the background doing things until you know we're there when it's a pandemic or an endemic or, you know, COVID. That's when y'all really saw our faces. But otherwise, we're in the background and we are providing prevention. Our goal is to provide prevention. You know, Miss Cherry talked about the spitting contest. It's only fitting you bring that up and talk about the health department. You know, when there's different outbreaks, TB, those type of things, or, you know, flu, all the things that we kind of do in the background to monitor our public safety. And it's really hard to measure the value of public health. And I've noticed that over my 20 years in public health, because it's hard to measure prevention. We don't know what the outcomes might have been had we not had the opportunity to provide that education to school-age children concerning drugs or sex or different types of risk-taking activities. You know, we don't know the outcomes of what it might be if we didn't have readily available free and reduced vaccines for anybody in our community. And so I think that's what's so... sometimes it's hard for us as public health personnel because people don't understand our value because they don't see the opposite side of it. And I think, you know, with social media and different things, we run a little bit more of a fence trying to make sure that people understand the good that we provide. I always say about vaccines, we don't see polio anymore, and there's a reason we don't see polio. So anyway, that's kind of my soapbox with a lot of public health things, but I wanted to kind of describe what our district is and what we do, the different programs within our district. So we're comprised, like I said, of five counties. Within that county, our district office is located at Lyon County, and that's where our administrative staff is. But then we do have a health department, which is mandated by the state in every county. Ours here is located on South Jefferson. Some of y'all may remember when it was on Hawthorne Street years ago. But it's now been located on South Jefferson since, I'm thinking, about 2011, I think. With that, we employ about 42 staff members, full-time, part-time staff members, and then we serve a close to 54,000 citizens within our district. And when I say we serve them, we see on average over 12,000 of them in our buildings throughout the year. So we have a lot of foot traffic that comes in through the health departments. Our mission statement is to protect the environment, provide preventative health services, and educate our community on promoting healthier lifestyles. And we do that through the different programs that we offer. So one of the main programs that I can think of that most all of you all would know is our clinical services program. And that employs 7 RNs throughout our district. And what we do with that, our clinical services include immunizations. We offer immunizations for all lifespan. And so we do shingles vaccines for anybody that's 55 and older. We do childhood vaccines. We give tetanus shots when you need a tetanus shot every 10 years. We also provide well child exams. We provide STD exams and treatment. We do pregnancy tests and breastfeeding education throughout our district. We do WIC services for nutritional counseling for expectant mothers and for children under 5. We have, so one of the things when I talk about our prevention component of public health, we are a lot of data collectors. So when I came back in 2021, we had done away with our family planning program. It wasn't able to be funded at the time. And so what happened is I started looking at some data on our teen pregnancy rates within our counties. And the teen pregnancy rate from 2021 to 2023 had started to increase. We'd seen a significant increase for a small communities when we think of it. So we reached out to one of our programs at State and I said, how can you help us fund a teen birth control clinic? And so they worked with us to provide at no cost to our community members a teen birth control clinic that is a clinic that is under Title 10. It allows for anybody to come 19 and under and receive birth control services. And it's no cost, it's confidential under Title 10. And that is something that really adds value to our community over time. You know, we want our young individuals to be able to have a prevention component that prevents them from making a choice that may affect their life the rest of their life and not be able to get the education that they need. And so just found that that was a valuable program, and we've really kind of dug into that. It's where we are able to provide a good educational component to these teens when they come in and talk to an adult that can share some information with them that is medically based information to help them understand their bodies and how they can affect their future. So that's something that we just started back a year and a half ago, and we've seen that to be evolving very well throughout our community, not only with our youth, but also with parents of our youth that want that education from a medical professional that feels comfortable speaking to their teens. We have a school health program that's located in Crittenden County Schools District. In the past, Pinerol District had been in all 5 schools, and that's something that had went away through different transitions, but we have brought Crittenden County back to as under us as a school district. And then we do tuberculosis evaluation, testing, and treatment. So one of the misconceptions, I think, is concerning public health and how it involves all community members. And when I look at our data of how the community members we see within our district, we see all aspects, from all economic aspects, whether they're uninsured or private insured. Actually, private insurance, we see probably as much of it as we do our Medicaid population. We do have, for individuals that are uninsured or underinsured, we have income-based services that allows them to make sure that they receive the services that they need also. Any questions about our clinical services right now? If not, talking about our health education, I have brought a few things just to share with you all today. I heard somebody say something about hand sanitizer. I have some hand sanitizer and different things in our bag, so make sure that I pass those around to you all. This is just a card that has our services on it. Pass them around, and then I'm going to pass the bag, and anything that you all want, I always come very good, like Santa Claus, but So for our health education program, we have three health educators. One is a certified diabetes educator. One is a certified tobacco cessation educator. And then we have a retired school teacher who does an absolute awesome job in our school system. But what we do with our health education programs is our diabetes educator provides classes throughout the district. She does those virtually and then in person, where she takes people that have maybe been newly diagnosed with diabetes and coaches them, explains to them appropriate diet, how to control type 2 and type 1 diabetes. She's excellent, been with us for years, and is very, very informative. Then we have our tobacco prevention, who teaches what's called Catch My Breath classes. She teaches those in the school system, and that's to teach teens the risk of vaping and how to prevent those risks for the future. And then also, we're seeing nowadays that young individuals as young as 12, 11 that are vaping, and you know that becomes a problem for them. They go through withdrawal just like an adult that tries to quit smoking. So providing classes for them concerning vaping cessation is something that we provide. With that, she's working on a program called Alternative to Suspension. So what happens for kids that are in school, you know, they get caught with a vape, they end up getting suspended, they go home, they get their vape, they start all over, you know. So we want to do that prevention model. So with that being said, what we do with them is instead of that student being suspended, they have the opportunity to go through cessation classes. And in doing that, they're able to...
You don't want my wallet?
No. I forgot that was in there. By doing that, they are able to not get suspended and receive some really quality education about the risk of vaping. So that's something that she's working on. And then we also offer tobacco cessation counseling at our health department through her. Additional, we have a risk reduction educator who is our retired school teacher, and she goes into the schools and teaches positive potential. And I think there's so much value to positive potential. If you all have not heard of that program previously, it is a program that is based on its grade level. It's at different grade levels, but what it really does is it allows students to understand that they're going to leave a legacy, and what type of legacy do they want to leave? And in doing so, how are the choices that they're going to make in middle school and high school and even fifth grade? How does that feed to their legacy for the future? And so she does a really nice job of that. I think that, you know, our kids in our community need to understand that and understand the impact of short-term decisions and how they make long-term effects. And so it's a wonderful program. She's actually in Caldwell County Schools at the middle school this week doing that program. Then we have our harm reduction education, which is our Narcan and overdose prevention. So you all may have seen throughout our community, we have Narcan stands. They're the universal purple stand where we offer free Narcan through the community. And that's through a grant that we wrote and received that provides that to us. And overdose is sometimes hard to talk about in a community. It's hard to recognize that we have concerns of overdose and drug use in our communities. But what I explain to people is there's two sides of that. One thing is with Narcan and overdose, that can be granny that took too much medicine. It's not always somebody that is intentionally taking medication to get a euphoria or high from it. But also that person that is utilizing that drug to get a high from it is somebody's child. They're somebody's son, their daughter, you know, and we want to provide them with the opportunity to make different choices. And so we have had some really, really heart-wrenching stories about Narcan being used that we've been able to provide throughout the district. So that is one of the things. With that Narcan that we provide, we also provide a card in there that's called Get Help Now. And that card has a barcode that they can scan, and it will show every treatment facility that is available in the state of Kentucky that has an open bed. It explains how they can get help based on their income or their insurance. So it'll tell if they take uninsured or if they take Anthem or who they take. if it's a 21-day treatment facility, if it's a 7-day treatment facility, and even what type of drugs that they specialize in, making sure that they use or that they are able to educate that patient on it and help them go through withdrawal from that. So really neat thing. That's something that is available throughout the state of Kentucky, and a lot of people don't know about that Find Help Now program. So please be aware of that and share that with anybody that might need to know that information. We offer CPR instruction and training throughout our district. We try to do the Narcan and CPR instruction and training for our local factories if they need it. And then also we do senior activities with our senior citizens. So we try monthly to visit our senior citizens and provide information concerning, one of them was the little first aid kit, the about being, you know, a little bit about preparedness. And then we've done different nutritional information about how to manage their budget and be able to get adequate nutrition, because we know our seniors sometimes struggle with managing their medicine versus buying their groceries. So we do a lot with our seniors, and that was one of the big things when I came back, is I want to make sure that we have a presence in all areas of our community. And you know, sometimes I think our seniors get forgotten through different things, different activities. In addition to health education, we have our environmental services program, which we have 5 full-time environmentalists that cover our 5 counties. And with them, they do our restaurant inspections. They do pool inspections, tanning bed, hotel inspections, which a lot of people don't realize that we do permit and inspect our hotels, trailer parks, and campgrounds. We do those also. We also evaluate septic systems throughout the county for to make sure that the septic system is placed correctly and that we don't have raw sewage that's going places it doesn't need to go and in our water sources. And then we do environmental complaints concerning trash and sewage. You know, if there's a concern for environmental pollution, then that comes to us, and then we either, if it's in our realm of what we take care of, or if it goes toward to the EPA or different facilities from there, different managing. Questions about either one of those programs that we offer?
What do you, have you found as one of the biggest needs in this county as well as our neighboring?
We just did a community health survey and we're actually going to publish that and present that to our board in 2 weeks. And what I find interesting about that is that most people that did that survey say they feel like they live in a safe community, but they don't feel like that there's availability of physical activities to benefit their health. And, you know, how do we fix that for individuals? You know, sometimes it goes back to good sidewalks, you know, just local things that we can do. But I found that really interesting that they find that it's a safe community, but they don't have the opportunity for those type of activities. One of the other things that was brought up in that I thought was interesting is that mental health resources was that was one of the things that was brought up, that there's limited access to mental health resources. And, you know, that's something that we see in our schools nowadays. We see it with our elderly. We see it with all age groups. But because of the availability with lack of insurance and uninsured, that sometimes becomes an issue. So we will take our community health survey, and then we will evaluate it to make sure that we're offering equity throughout our communities based on what those needs are. So we do preparedness also. That's one of our other things that we set on a lot of committees to work to make sure that our communities are going to be safe when it comes time for a weather event, another natural disaster, earthquake, anything like that. So we do a lot of behind the scene trainings and train individuals to be able to make sure that we can respond appropriately when it comes time for those type of events, and when they happen in our communities, that we have the resources our community needs. Our last program that we do, where I started, was in the HANDS program. And PANS currently employs an RN, two social workers, and four home visitors throughout our counties. And what HANS is, it's a home visitation program, and it's for anybody regardless of income. It's based on if they're expecting or if their child is under 2 months old. And what it does is it provides educational resources for a mom that's expecting concerning labor and delivery and preparing for her child and what she needs when the child gets here. And then once the child is born, it provides educational enrichment activities that help with brain development. So research shows that the brain grows most rapidly in that first 2 years of life, and that's prior to that child ever getting to school. So we start talking about school readiness from the time the child's born. And, again, prevention is hard to measure, but the outcomes with PANS are to decrease risk of abuse, decrease risk of SIDS, and then also to prepare that child for school when they get to school. So, and they do different, what we call ASQs, where they look at the child to make sure that they're meeting the goals that they need to meet at the age they are. And if they're not, say there's a speech delay or maybe there's a concern with vision or hearing, we can identify early on in the child's life and go ahead and get some intervention going with that child prior to them getting to school and being delayed. So, any questions about the programs that we do?
First of all, I did not realize how diverse you are. And I can't imagine a country without public education or public health, because it's not just a shot or a pill or a birth control.
Right, right.
It's so much more for our community. So are you being impacted by funding nationally or state?
So at this time, we are continuing to operate as normal. Going forward, as things change, we will see how that funding, changes. But we will continue to operate the way that we are operating now.
Are you mainly state funded versus
so we
federal?
We are local funded. We are state funded. And we're federal funded, and then we're grant funded for and that's kind of what I personally think is that we have to look at our community health survey and then see what grants can fund those gaps. Every community has healthcare gaps, and that's where the health department can fill in and see what we can do. The Title X program. There's no other healthcare facility in our district that adheres to that confidentiality to allow somebody that's under a minor come in and receive birth control. So that's why it's so important that we can do that, because that's a gap in our community.
And that includes parental consent.
You don't have to have parental consent, no ma'am. So that's, that's sometimes hard for a parent. I know as a parent of a 21-year-old, but I would hope that she would seek that service from somebody that has the background and the knowledge rather than seek that service from somebody that's her peer. And that's what happens sometimes, is they start seeking information from a peer and it's not adequate or appropriate information.
I think one of the things during COVID, I began to appreciate how much the health department meant to the community. And I think prior to that, there'd been a decrease in funding or something had been going on. But when something like that hits, somebody's got to control it.
Right. Right. And I think we saw that on our public health system when that happened, because we were lean. We were very, and so we brought in a lot of new staff and had to educate them very quickly. And, that's a concerning. It's concerning when you think that there's a lot of us that there's not the seasoned public health staff that was in public health prior to COVID. And a lot of public health staff took kind of a mass exodus during COVID because they were at the point they could retire and just could not deal with the stress of it. And I can completely understand that.
About inoculations, are you seeing a decrease in that?
So, we have kind of evaluated that. And one of the services that we offer for our schools is during, actually it's this time of year, every year, we offer an on-site vaccine clinics for our middle and high school students that tend to be that gap age of students that get missed. So we send home, we check records, we send everything home, and we come to the school and provide those. What I personally see and what is kind of seen reflected in our data locally is it's not that people are as resistant to being vaccinated. It's more that it's an inconvenience to get there to do it. So when we go on site to do that for a parent, they find that it's a convenience, and we really don't have the hesitancy that we see maybe more publicized in the news and on social media. So, and that's where I go back to. We do kind of run that. We try to provide very factual, evidence-based information concerning anything with public health. And sometimes that's hard when social media doesn't always have that kind of information.
The Rotary's been so involved with the polio, eradicating polio, and suddenly we hear that may not even be.
Yeah.
May start again in the United States.
Yes.
We know.
Yes.
That's concerning.
It is very concerning. And, you know, my take on that is I vaccinate myself and I vaccinate my family members to prevent that, so that if somebody doesn't, I'm not risking my family member. You know, that's because it is. It's very concerning when you think of the things that we have been able to prevent over time based on immunizations. And, you know, and sometimes that becomes a conversation of conflict that really is not, it's everybody has the choice, and we want to provide them with that, but we also want to provide them with the opportunity to have the most adequate and evidence-based information.
Thank you so much.
Did I beat that? I appreciate it. Thank you all for having me, and I appreciate it so much. Thank you.